Dennis himself is a retired teacher. He's been past president of the Alberta Senior Citizens Housing Association. He retired in the year 2000 as a principal with the Palliser School Division. He became actively involved with issues affecting seniors and such organizations as the Green Acres Foundation. 1999 to 2006, he was a board member and the chair. He's on the Seniors Advisory Council of Alberta Housing, 2000 to 2005. Lethbridge Seniors Community Forum, 2004 to present. Alberta Senior Citizens Housing, 2003 to 2006, a board member and president. Providence Home Owners Association, Coaldale, 2003 to 2006, a board member and president of ASCHA, that's Alberta, Health Housing Standing Committee, 2005 to present. So Dennis, will you come and speak, please?
Thank you, Diane. All the world of acronyms and abbreviations. Thank you for this opportunity to talk to you about something that we all hopefully face, and that is a place to live as we become seniors. I have that teaching background, as Diane said, and as I was reviewing my notes from the last couple of days as I was preparing, of course, you know what teachers are like. This morning I started adding this and this and this. So I come from an environment where you talk for 45 minutes to an hour. I hope I can keep it shorter than that. But if you fall asleep, at least I'll understand because I've had that experience before. I hope to give you a historical overview of seniors housing, senior public housing in Alberta. Then talk about the changing environment as things started to change in the 90s and as we entered into the 21st century. Then I'll talk about the new standards and framework that have just been mandated in the past year and how they will affect seniors housing. And then try to finish off with local area facilities and talk about costs and the different options that are available in our region here in southern Alberta, Lethbridge and District, and talk about some of the future issues that would probably come up in the question period more than in my speech. In the post-war years, the 1950s, elderly people were largely cared for by the family unit. That is, you lived, I know in my personal experience, right next door to Grandma and Grandpa, or as people got older, they would sometimes move in with their son or daughter. There were a few faith-based and private seniors' homes that existed at that time, but very few. In the 1950s, as society started to change and we became more mobile and moved out of the, you know, from the rural areas into the big cities and things like that, seniors started to have more difficulty in finding a place to live. And so in 1959, the government of Ernest Manning, social credit government, passed the Homes for the Aged Act. And this was an attempt to address an issue that had been building because there weren't that many alternatives. And what was happening then, and you'll hear about it later in the 90s, was that people who were aged were ending up in auxiliary homes and in active treatment hospitals and filling up those facilities when they didn't need that level of intense care. And so the social credit government came up with this alternative. The purpose was to house the well elderly, as they called them in those days, and to free up the higher level of care facilities. They proposed to build 50 seniors' lodges over a five-year period. By 1961, they'd already built 69. And again, these were dedicated or primarily built for the low to moderate income people of the day. And that's when the Green Acres Foundation, of which I was a member for a number of years, a board member, was created, and you'll remember Don LeBaron was the administrator of that organization for a long time, and also the ASHA organization, Alberta Senior Citizens Housing Association, was created in those first few years of the 60s as people involved in the operation of lodges had no training or background at that time. It was simply thrust upon them, and part of that act that was passed by Ernest Manning said that the responsibility for operation and construction had to be shared between the province and the municipalities, and so you had municipal politicians and individuals actually operating the facilities as they were government-owned. In addition to lodges, as the 60s went on, the provincial government started to build or partner in the building of self-contained apartments for independent elderly persons, places that we know today like the Legion Arms, Legion Terrace, facilities like that that organizations, be they faith-based or otherwise, wanted to build for their seniors, and the government assisted in that. By 1973, the Homes for the Aged Act was struck and replaced by the Alberta Housing Act, and then taken over or administered by the Municipal Affairs Department. The original facilities amenities were pretty basic. Studies at the time, and it still made sense, they were one story so that people didn't have to go up and down steps. Quite often you'd find them built in a U-shape, especially here in southern Alberta, you know, the back of the U to protect you from the west winds, and then the courtyard in between, things like that, which we've experienced in the last few days. There were some shared rooms allowed in those days, or not allowed, but actually built that way to save costs. The toilet and wash basin did exist in each of the rooms, but your bathing facilities were often down the hallway. Minimum, or the space that you were allotted for rooms in those days by the government, 110 square feet for a single, 186 square feet for a double. These were all bachelor suites. By the 1980s, we did move that up to around 250 square feet, but again, from early 60s into the 80s, that was pretty well the way things were built. Staffing, there was no formula established at that time, and you know, like they used to say about teachers, if you can't do, teach. Well, if you can't do, look after seniors was also the prevalent attitude of society at that time, because there was no training requirement for anybody to run a lodge other than to be a nice person who happened to like grandmas and grandpas. The mandate of lodges at the time and apartment buildings was definitely housing, not caregiving. This model that I've just described seemed to satisfy Albertans as we went through the 70s and 80s. And then in the 90s, new pressures started to appear that changed how housing operations were going to be done significantly. And the first and still ongoing major change, I feel, is medical advances. Seniors' population was living longer and healthier lives. They were delaying moving into lodges and apartments until their mid-80s. The average age of entry into lodges in across Alberta today is in the 85 range, 85, 86. Originally, back in the 60s, my grandfather went into a lodge in his late 60s. Most people went in right around that 70-year mark. It's certainly changed since then. The older clientele meant ever-increasing need for personal and health supports. By osmosis, a lot of seniors' lodges were becoming like health facilities. Walkers, wheelchairs, medication assistance, guidance and queuing for those suffering from dementia started to become more and more prevalent. And that worked so long as there were just a few of the people in the lodges that were like that. But as those needs became more prevalent and more complex, it increased the pressures on lodge operators. And the general issue of sustainability of the health system was another one of the 90s that forced seniors with health issues to seek other alternatives. Just like back in 1959, in the 90s, as again, active treatment and auxiliary hospitals were bulging at the seams. Remember the term of the early 90s, the bed blockers? Well, that was, again, a pressure that reappeared. And then in 1993 and afterwards, of course, we had the Klein Revolution. Budget cuts happened in all areas of government spending. The mantra of the day was, government is no longer in the business of bricks and mortar, where they had built these facilities prior to this or provided the funds for the building of them. They got out of that. Capital funding for foundations to build to meet future needs was now gone. operational budgets were slashed, deficit funding became more and more the onus of the municipalities as government financial support shifted from approximately one-third of the financial support coming from municipalities and two-thirds from the provincial government. In the 90s, it became the mirror opposite. The provincial government only funded about one-third of the costs, and the municipal governments were voted down or downloaded with the expense of about two-thirds of the costs that weren't covered by rents. Rents did rise in the 90s, but only at politically acceptable or tolerable rates, not at the actual inflationary rates. Also during the 80s and 90s, more and more faith-based and private for-profit operations were being built. You've got the Bethany Group, the Good Samaritans, the Shepherd's Care organizations. Those kinds of organizations were building. But they were mainly being built in the urban areas where the population could support keeping these facilities full. The public housing foundations, especially in the rural areas, did not react well to the new realities of the Klein Revolution, and construction of new facilities and modernizations were severely curtailed as the 90s wound down. As those 90s and the century were drawing to a close, the cracks in our seniors' housing system were widening, and our health system's sustainability was at an even greater risk, with much of the blame being placed on our seniors' population, of whom it was stated, they're accessing an inordinate amount of professional and financial resources in the health system. I'm sorry, but I don't believe in the Eskimo solution of hopping on an ice floe and disappearing. I want to stay alive, and I want to have a healthy and full active life. We as a society have to accept that if we're going to live longer and have more problems, somebody's going to have to pay for it. Whether we do it as individuals or as a society, there's got to be a solution besides the ice floe. As governments are wont to do, the provincial government commissioned a study of seniors' issues. In 1999, the Broder Report came up with many good recommendations to address issues. Unfortunately, most of the recommendations were lost in the one phrase that this Broder Report is noted for. Alberta's seniors should be allowed to age in place. That's great political rhetoric, but it came to mean almost everything to everyone in every situation. Yes, we all want to stay in our homes as long as we possibly can. But as you become increasingly frail and have to have services done for you in your own home, it becomes more and more expensive all the time. And aging in place, by and large, especially in the media, came to mean you can stay in that home. Well, a lot of us don't stay in the same home throughout our whole adult lives, although Diane and I have. One of our kids says if we ever move, thought we were going to have a divorce. Change is something you don't do. Well, again, when we reach that stage in life where we can't look after that house anymore, where we can't look after all the different things that are happening, something has to happen. And aging in place, I don't believe, and especially if you look at the demographics of the future, will not be financially viable. There aren't going to be enough young people working to keep the white hairs like me in my own home in the future. And remember also, this is 1999, 2000, we were still in the era of slaying the debt, and money and resources were not the political will of the day. We had to hold on to that tough line and not provide human services in our province. Let the market forces decide people can afford to pay for their own services. The Broder Report did get people thinking, however. It forced us to become innovative and to address issues in different ways. It talked about collaboration, and I remember in my first year or so, it was October of 2001, I attended a workshop in Edmonton where Minister of Health at the time, Gary Marr, and Minister of Seniors, Stan Walashin, talked about how there was going to be an interdisciplinary approach to seniors' issues in the future and how those government departments are going to work together. We in ASHA and Green Acres revised our old ways of doing things and sought government leadership in setting standards and expectations that, first of all, met the ever-changing needs and more complex needs of seniors who were in our lodges and independent apartments, that were achievable and financially viable by the service agencies, be they health services or the housing industry services. And third, that they be understood by the public, that's the seniors and their families. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. There's been a lot of confusion out there, a lot of expectations that were raised by the Broder Report that didn't have the infrastructure, the resources to go along with them, and expectations that were misunderstood. The political will to support change did not surface until a few years later when, I think, first of all, July of 2003, and long-term care rates were increased by 40% overnight. There was a tremendous political storm over that amongst the seniors population of Alberta. It happened. It's funny. We made that change. We increased the costs. And today, the Alberta government is being sued because it's being sued for not providing the extra services that extra cost was to address. What that extra cost really was addressing was those organizations that were running long-term care at the time had not had rent increases for a long period of time, over a decade, I believe. And this was a catch-up move, not an increase of services move. And so that one caused the government to at least start paying attention a little bit more. Then in 2004, unfortunately, tragic incidents of improper or inappropriate caregiving took place, and there was a scalding death, and there were other stories that came out that again put the government on notice that they had left this part of Alberta's advantage too long. 2005, the Auditor General's report on long-term care in Alberta and the MLA Task Force on Long-Term Care and Supportive Living, which Bridget was part of, identified the deficiencies and made recommendations for improvement. A lot of it came from those philosophies expounded by the Broder Report, but they started to finally get down to the specifics. The recommendations from the MLA Task Force were endorsed by the Minister of Seniors and Community Supports, Yvonne Fritz, and the Minister of Health and Wellness, Iris Evans. We're finally getting some cooperation between those two ministries. And they also managed, and this was the big surprise, to gain caucus and cabinet support that was previously absent. These new initiatives are not just about throwing more money at the problem. Rather, they're about changing the way we operate, how we work together to deliver needed and appropriate assisted living options to Alberta seniors. We in ASHA, the operators like Green Acres Foundation, which is a leader in this, had recognized that for years. We had standards for years and years and years about housekeeping for well elderly, but as we had more and more of the people who had assisted living needs, we didn't have standards, and we asked the government for that leadership in providing that. And I remember sitting on that Seniors Advisory Council committee and hearing from an MLA that the government is not into regulation. It will not provide a whole new system to look after seniors. The market will look after things. Mr. Woloshin, who did support this change and these new standards, the new concept of standards and framework, did support it, but he couldn't get it through caucus. But we kept pushing ahead. ASHA members started to develop standards on their own, and then after the MLA task force, government jumped on board in a hurry. I became vice president of ASHA on November the 27th of 2005. 3 days later, we got a call from the Ministry of Seniors wanting to meet and talk about new standards. We'd been asking for the past decade and couldn't get a response. In the last 2 years, I've been to Edmonton almost more than Clint and Bridget. So as we enter this new year of 2007, how has this old house changed? Well, first it's important, I think, to understand that seniors housing is no longer an either-or situation. I had a spinster aunt who was in the Green Acres Lodge back in the 1980s. My wife looked after her. And at that time, when she became incontinent, there was no place else for her to go except into a long-term care situation. Physically, she was failing, but her mind was bright and still there, and Diane still quotes all kinds of poems and things like that that Aunt Jenny did recite constantly. But long-term care, laying in a bed, was not mentally stimulating, and that change in her environment caused her to go downhill in a hurry. That either-or situation had to be changed, and in a lot of lodges it was happening. Again, you could do it with housekeepers and waitresses and people who just naturally loved old people and help them out, but I remember my father being in the system early in the 90s too, and the waitresses would come and put his medication down on the table, and sometimes they would sit there and talk to him and make sure he took it, and then the next time they put it down the table and somebody knocked something off the table over here, they rushed over to help there, and he put it in his pocket. When he left Miami Lodge in Pitcher Butte that year, I found two or three bottles full of his medications. Why he wasn't taken, nobody ever knows, but the realization that we had people administering medications, and unfortunately his weren't life-threatening or life-saving types. We had no proper protocols, no proper procedures to make sure that this was done in a health acceptable way. So change was necessary. We talked about a spectrum of services where needs increase as you get older. It's the reverse of going to school. When you're in kindergarten and elementary school, you get all kinds of supports, right? By the time you're in high school, your parents don't even know when report cards come out because you hide it from them. That kind of thing happens with adults, too. In our 60s and 70s, we don't have somebody looking after us, but as we get into the 85s, 90s, and there are some 94-year-olds over at Pemmican Lodge that lead exercise classes, so it's not everybody, but a lot of us by that time need that kind of support and assistance, right? In the housing industry, we work from this perspective, is that the house, the apartment, is your home. So home living for a senior is, or a regular adult, is living independently in a house, an apartment, or a condo. It can be one of the Medican buildings overlooking the river bottom, or it can be in one of our Green Acres subsidized housing facilities like the Legion Terrace, Legion Place, or Blue Sky Manor, those kinds of facilities. But again, they're residents. Supportive living is still housing, and this is where we live in a congregate setting. Lodges and assisted living and enhanced assisted living, which I'll talk about in a minute and refer to with those pages that I put on the table, provide increasing levels of personal and health supports. But again, the health supports are brought into their home. They're still residents of that facility. When you get to facility living, the senior lives in a long-term care facility, and that's a nursing home or auxiliary hospital. And because medical needs are so high and complex, they require full-time health and nursing care. And you then become a patient. And that's the difference. That's a significant change in what kinds of freedoms you have, what kinds of choices you have, and what kinds of supports you need. The home living, the supportive living, is, again, managed under the Housing Act of Alberta. The long-term care facilities are governed either by the Nursing Home Act or the Hospital Act. Your choice of what you can do in a long-term care facility when you get to that stage where your health needs are such that the person is brought to an institution where the services exist. You can't afford to put these services in every home around the province, be it an individual home or a congregate living place like a lodge. And so that's how you work there. Institutional living, the medical needs and interventions largely dictate your decisions and your daily life because you can no longer go and ignore those kinds of things. As we went through life, we were all told, you know, don't smoke. I don't know if I want to bring that up in this last couple of days here in Lethbridge, but eat healthy and all of those kinds of things, right? By the time you get to this stage in your life in a long-term care type of facility, nutrition is looked after for you and things like that. And in lodges, for a long time, you didn't have much choice as far as meals and stuff go there either. But as we've got into the competitive century that we're in now, that kind of flexibility is happening. And I'll talk a little bit later about how the amenities have changed, but nutrition is just one of them. Those sheets that I put on your table, and I apologize, the teacher in me got to me again. I had to hand out some homework. Basically describe the framework that the Minister of Seniors and Minister of Health approved and declared or mandated this past spring. And what it's an attempt to do is identify the different levels of care that exist now in this old house and how you move from an independent senior to a more, we're independent, but as soon as you have somebody do something else for you, you're getting some sort of assistance, right? And for a long time, in the 90s and early 2000s, all kinds of organizations were advertising assisted living. Well, what exactly did that assisted living mean? Was it medical? Some people, like the aging in place phrase, started to expect that it was all health services and things like that. Not all lodges provide all health services. And so, as you see there, there is a, you read it from left to right, and we've identified four levels. The first is home living, and that's the apartment or condo or whatever. The second, lodge living. Then still within the lodges, we bring in more and more of the health and personal support services for assisted living, true assistance in getting through the day. And that might be mobility things, like helping you get into the wheelchair so you can get down to the dining room. It can be if you're arthritic and can't get dressed all by yourself and things like that, you know, getting that old arm back there, and then this other one gets more and more difficult. Those kinds of things do happen, and so bringing in those kinds of supports is what we have categorized as true assisted living. Enhanced assisted living, again, becomes even more medical. If you're diabetic and need shots on a regular basis, again, the housekeeper and the waitresses can't do those kinds of things, so we bring in the health services, contract to have those health services brought in. Now, at any level, you can have some of those services done in your home, too, but once your frailties or your issues start to multiply and become multiple rather than just one issue, be it dementia or mobility or nutrition or whatever, that's when it's, I feel best to move into some sort of assisted living or congregate setting. The example I use, I guess, first is if I die first and Diane, as we move into our 70s and 80s, still, I mean, she's going to cook until she absolutely can't turn the stove on anymore. But the lawn work, the paint.